Good morning. My name is Leslie, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the first quarter of 2024. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of the Economic Planning Unit at the Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Head of Public Credit and International Affairs Unit at the Ministry of Finance, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for joining us. With me is my colleague, Maria Carmen Bonilla, so we will be answering your questions in a brief. But first, we want to make some remarks. I will start with the remarks speaking about the global economy and some remarks about the evolution of the Mexican economy. And then, since we were coming from the spring meetings in the IMF and Washington, so I will speak a little brief about what we learned and what were the things that we discussed with the IMF and other financial institutions and organizations. And finally, I will make some remarks about the results of the first quarter of 2024 relative to the public finances. So let me just start with a quick remarks on the global economy. So basically, we still see geopolitical tensions prevail as the main source of uncertainty in the global economy outlook. In addition, there are some trade disruptions related to climate issues, change and volatility in commodity prices, and higher for longer interest rates may raise debt service burdens as countries and firms roll over their debt. Overall, the supply shocks and tight monetary conditions remain as a drag on the global economy. However, economic activity has been proven resilient in some heterogeneity among regions, especially in the U.S. The slowdown compared to previous quarter, basically we saw private domestic demand keeps growing at the same pace as the previous quarter. However, an important significant reduction in the imports content, net imports, and lower inventory accumulation reduce the growth of the U.S. For the rest of the year, we expect the economic activity in the U.S. that will naturally slow down, but slightly higher with the growth of the industrial production. So on average, we are not changing so far our estimate for the growth economy and for Mexico's economy. We saw an improvement in China and the euro area, so this would be positive for the global outlook. Now, in terms of inflation, it has come down but remains above central bank targets. During the first quarter of 2024, we faced slightly rebounds due to escalating supply shocks and persistence in service inflation. Despite this, we see progress towards inflation outlook. Basically, when we track close to 46 countries that have a close relation or some kind of relation with Mexico and the U.S., we see that there are 14 out of the 46 that have inflation significantly above target as of March. For example, Colombia, Ghana, South Korea, Russia, and Romania. And there are only 17 countries that are basically on target, versus three that was in August of 2022. So basically Albania, Costa Rica, Guatemala, and Poland, and some others. In terms of the monetary policy, we expect a higher for longer interest rate. As of February, market expectations and the Fed projections converged to 75 basis points expected cut. But as of today, markets are expecting 25 basis cut for the year. Most likely it would be in December after the U.S. presidential election. In American markets, we still see an easing cycle that keeps going. Basically, Chile and Brazil have been accumulating or the countries that have an accumulating reduction, while Mexico only has 25 basis points as of March. Now, for the Mexican economy, let me just start saying that we have faced some heterogeneity among sectors and still supply shocks, both internal and external, that accumulated in the first month of the year. However, the strength of the labor market and the benefits from past year's investment will provide some support for the economy for the remainder of the year. We saw the GDP flash estimate growing at 2% annual, 0.2 quarter on quarter. So basically we have 10 quarters of consecutive growth for Mexican economy. We're still witnessing an accumulation of supply shocks affecting production, distribution, and logistic processes. With these adverse effects on economic activity and prices, several climate issues are still coming up, like droughts and water shortages in several regions of the economy. So basically, we have our supply shock tracker. So as the first quarter of 2024, we have identified up to 120 events per month versus 60 events per month in 2023. So in April, they have we have less, close to 45. But just to highlight that these supply shocks have been piling onto each other, and we think that these have been affecting both the production and the prices, and this is kind of in line with what we have seen so far with the CPI outturns and the economic activity. Now, for example, some of the main ones were the winter frost in Texas, the strikes in the U.S. and Mexico with the cars production, national carriers strike, and several roadblocks that we have within the first quarter. In terms of the sectoral dynamics, at the sectoral level, we observe better performance in sectors benefiting from recent high investment rates and those linked to nearshoring trends. Basically, we have increased demand for logistic and communication services, transportation, mail, information and mass media, and somehow a sort of normalization in sectors that were contact intensive and were having a boost coming out of the pandemic. So recreational services, restaurants, hotels, and accommodation services in general. Now, we have also seen some return in the labor outsourcing reform effects in the service sector as of January-February bimester. Basically, the business support services contracted by 7.1%. We don't know if it's going to be still going for the rest of the year, but we have seen so far an effect in these 2 months. In terms of the labor market, we still see unemployment at record low, 2.3%. Labor force participation still going in a good rate, 60%. And the labor gap, which we calculate as unemployed, underemployed and available, not looking for a job, it's practically at the lowest level since we have a register. In terms of the regional dynamics, although it has more lagging information that we cannot observe very timely, but the results of the state economic activity were released on Monday, and this confirms several important trends. Just let me highlight some. The southern region has grown more than the rest of the country in the last 4 years. This is something that has not happened since the 80s, and four states have the best economic performance in the south, basically Tabasco, Oaxaca, and Quintana Roo and Chiapas. In terms of the inflation dynamics, after the complex episodes during the pandemic and subsequently the distortions in the global trade and geopolitical conflict, I would like to highlight that Mexico inflation shows a downward trend. Although inflation in Mexico is still above the target, we see that it's closer to its historical average or unconditional average, as you want to measure it. So basically, the CPI, it's 1.4 percentage point above target, but only 0.2 percentage points above historical average. And since the standard deviation is close to 1%, basically the C-score is 0.2. To be compared with the U.S., we think that Mexico is practically better in terms of the outlook for the inflation. Although with the CPI and the PCE differences with the U.S. metrics, we basically see that the inflation in the U.S. is it's above historical average, but also in terms of the C-score, it's higher than Mexico. In fact, the inflation differential between Mexico and the U.S. has decreased compared to historical data. Between 2003 and 2018, the difference between inflation rates averaged 2 percentage points, whereas in the last 12 months, the average differential between Mexico and the U.S. is 1.3 percentage points. So this is relevant in the context that Mexico imported content of inflation has increased. So this is something that we have seen in the data, as well as the percentage of our imports coming from the U.S. So, for example, in 2003, we imported 13% of our total imports from the U.S., and in 2023, it was 16%. So this is a smaller differential between national inflation and that of our main trading partner implies that we have higher imported inflation than we used to have. And in terms of, in general, this implies also that Mexico is relatively more competitive than before, and we should expect less pressure from the peso to depreciate against the U.S. dollars just by the PPP parity theory. We still don't see evidence that the budget deficit is adding more pressure to the domestic inflation. Basically, headline inflation in the first fortnight of April, on a year-to-date basis, it's at 1.1% versus the 1.1% average in no election years. And this is the same practically for core inflation, the inflation for the basic goods. And in terms of the GDP deflator, although we only have data up to the fourth quarter of 2023, we can see that basically private consumption is at 2.2%, so it's relatively low, while investors is actually having a deflation of minus 1.6%. Now, the contribution of the deflator for the government consumption and investment has grown indeed, but the growth of the deflator of the government consumption and investment has increased relative to historical level, but the contribution is still quite low and significantly lower than the private and investment consumption. Now, however, we have to say that we see in some southern cities due to tourism and northern cities due to nearshoring, wages and relative prices have increased. So this, we don't see it as a general trend that is across all the inflation CPIs across all regions, but we have seen where we have identified some relative prices coming up, as well as some construction materials due to the expansion of production capacity. So basically, in some cities, the consumer price have increased relative to March, and some building materials also have higher prices, in particular the cement and paint and other concrete products. Now, in terms of the expansion for the quarter and the remainder of the year, we still see that having a very good levels of consumer and producer confidence. The labor market continues very well and very low levels of unemployment and high participation rate. The business confidence and consumer confidence still have a very high readings and the economic situation in the coming months. So we think growth in the Mexican economy and the stabilization of the general, the macro outlook is going to be good. Now, let me switch to the global fiscal trends. As I was mentioning, we spent some time in Washington with the discussion with several people, experts in the field. So before turning to the quarterly fiscal results, I would like to briefly discuss some recent evolution of the global public finances according to our discussions during the spring meetings. So basically, in 2023, we learned that the process of fiscal consolidation was practically interrupted against the backdrop of the surge in interest rates and spending pressure from energy prices and subsidies that many countries have to go on. In some cases, the scarring effects from the pandemic still continue in the economy. Now, less countries improved their primary balances relative to previous years. So, for example, out of 82 countries in 2021, 74% of those 82 improved their primary balances, while in 2023, only 60%. And by 2024, they are expected like close to 60% as well. Now, for Latin America, it was even worse. While in 2021, 71% of the Latin American countries improved their primary balance. By 2023, only 50% will improve. So, of course, on the top of that, we see higher government financial costs for many countries, especially the U.S. and Brazil are quite remarkable, that practically went from 2 or 4% to 5% and 3.7%. So in this context, unlike the rest of the world, Mexico improved its fiscal position in 2023 by 1 percentage point of GDP. And in 2024, despite the projected increase in the deficit, our position relative to the rest of the LATAM and other emerging market has actually improved relative to the average of many countries. And just let me share with you some differences between our gross debt in percent of GDP relative to other countries. So in Mexico, relative to other emerging markets, excluding, of course, China, in 2018, for example, we used to have a 1.6 percentage points difference in debt, meaning Mexico had, on average, a 1.6% more debt to GDP than the average of the emerging markets, while in 2024, we're actually going to be 1.1% below. And relative to our peers with the same rating position, in 2018, we used to have 20% percentage points below debt, and in 2024, it's close to 21 percentage points. So that means that Mexico, in terms of the debt to GDP, is still one of the countries with the lowest debt to GDP, according to IMF estimates, for example. This is something that we discussed with the team, with the WHT team. So Mexico doesn't need to make any significant adjustment to the primary balances between 2023 and 2029 to put its debt on a stable trajectory or to pre-pandemic levels. So practically, they show us a graph that they show that the primary balance needed to stabilize the debt to GDP ratio for Mexico is 0%. So practically, we don't need to do any fiscal aggressive consolidation from 2024 to 2029, while Peru and Brazil and Chile are close or higher than 1 percentage point. So huge fiscal effort. And the primary balance needed to stabilize the debt to GDP back to the debt level of 2019 for Mexico is 0.7. So meaning we would need to have a primary surplus of 0.7, while Peru, again, Brazil and Chile, again, they need a deficit higher than 1%. So let me finish with some remarks on the public finances of the first quarter of 2024. So practically, public finances remain broadly in line with the program expectations. Total revenues were roughly in line with the program, with real increases in tax revenues and a decrease in oil revenues. Public spending stood below the budget, with significant real increases in social development spending and fiscal investment. Practically, the budget revenues were 41 billion pesos below the program and 2.4% higher in real terms relative to 2023. Practically, this was explained by lower oil revenues by 34 billion pesos, while we have tax revenues above the program by 8.9 billion pesos. The non-tax revenues also were above the program by 23 billion pesos, and the total spending was actually below the program by 122 billion pesos. This was practically related to program of spending that was a little bit in line with the program and some of the financial cost savings that we have close to 38 billion relative to the program. In terms of the public balances performance, this is consistent with the stable debt path. Practically, we have better than expected fiscal balances that are on a stable trajectory in line with the estimates that we have for 2024, the public balances, the primary balances, and the net public debt. So basically, I will stop there and pass the microphone to Mari Carmen, so she will be making some remarks.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone. I will share the main results of debt management during the first quarter of 2024. I would like to reassert as well that the main objective of the federal government is to maintain public debt in a sustainable path as percentage of GDP, and that we are continuously engaging strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce the refinancing risk, and see cost-efficient transactions. In this regard, I would like to summarize the main actions contained in the report. Regarding domestic debt, during the first quarter of 2024, we sought opportunities and strategies to improve the debt portfolio metrics. On January 17, we did the first government securities exchange. This transaction redeemed 110 billion pesos maturing in 2024 through a buyback of CETES and short-term bonds EFSE and linkers. Simultaneously, the same kind of instruments but with maturities between 2025 and 2032 were offered. Subsequently, on February 2nd, another exchange offer was executed, this one with around 45 billion pesos with maturities between 2024 and 2025. This is to smoothen out the amortizations we have for the coming years. As you know, these maturities were high because they used to be long-dated bonds. And in that sense, we wanted to smoothen out the curve. This transaction involved buying back M bonos and short-term UDI bonos, and at the same time, we offer these instruments with longer maturities from 2029 to 2050. Regarding new references, on March 8th, we syndicated a sustainable floating rate announcement in the local market. This has a B2 cover of 4.6 times. And this transaction included 1 year, 3 year, and 6 year tranches. As you know, part of the commitment we show during the annual borrowing plan on December on ESG. This auction was around 12 billion pesos. On March 17, another syndicated transaction was executed. This was to put a new reference on the 10-year UDI bono benchmark that was needed. The total issue amount was 1.1 billion UDIs, equivalent to 14.5 billion pesos. As Rodrigo mentioned, we have a lot of volatility lately in the last month. The curve was repricing. And not only for developed markets, but also for our local markets, there was a sharp repricing on the expectations on the monetary policy path, reassured by some data coming either in the U.S. and Mexico, and extraordinary measures were undertaken during the auction of the last two weeks. We reduced the amount of the 10-year M bono and UDI bono for around 13 billion pesos. I would like to make sure that this is a one-off. We wanted to take out this sensitivity on the market because of the volatility and the sharp repricing. We are seeing right now better market conditions, and we will redistribute either in the allocation with the flexibility we have in the short-dated instruments, or if the market conditions improves, to accommodate in other type of securities. Of course, this will be announced properly as we do with the central bank, and we'll let you know before we conduct any new transaction. Regarding foreign debt, during the first quarter of 2024, we used the external debt as a complementary source of financing. In line with the annual borrowing plan, on January 2, we did the first issuance of the year for an amount of $7.5 billion. As we mentioned as well, we wanted to to accumulate or to have those requirements in the first quarter of the year to avoid any additional volatility coming on during the year. This was for a benchmark with 5-year, 12-year, and 30-year bonds with coupon rates of 5.6 and 6.40, respectively. This has a huge oversubscription, as well as on January 18, we did a new sustainable bond transaction in the European market with an 8-year maturity and a coupon rate of 4.49%. As of today, this deal is this sustainable transaction is the one with the largest demand in the euro market, and it will also help to complete the sustainable yield curve for this market to keep up with the benchmarks. Of course, all the transactions that I mentioned previously are in compliance with the ceiling approved by the Mexican Congress for the fiscal year of 2024. I just like to focus as well that liability management has been a very good tool to us. And right now, as of the first quarter of 2024, we have refinanced this year 155 billion pesos in internal debt, and during the entire administration, approximately $15 billion of short-term debt and 2.3 trillion pesos in the local market. That's why we have as well smoothened out this need to keep on doing these transactions, because the profile has improved and you have seen on the metrics. Now I would like to mention some debt levels as percentage of GDP. At the end of the first quarter, the PSDRs stood at 45.5% of GDP. Domestic debt represented 34.8% and external debt 10.7%. Regarding net debt, that includes federal government, state-owned enterprises, and development banks, this figure was 45.5% of GDP at the end of the first quarter of 2024. Domestic debt represented 34.7% of GDP and external debt 10.8% of GDP. Lastly, the federal government net debt was 39.4% of GDP at the end of this quarter, and the domestic component stood at 33.1%, while the external component represented 6.3% of the GDP, respectively. Regarding risk metrics, currency risk remains low, with only 16% of the federal government net debt being denominated in foreign currency, and 84% denominated in domestic currency. Refinancing risk stands at low level as well, since the average maturity of foreign market debt is 19.3 years, and of domestic debt, 7.8 years. Additionally, even though we reshape a little bit our program, the interest rate risk is also limited, given that 77.1% of domestic market is long-term debt and at fixed nominal and real rates. Well, as you know, 100% of the external market debt is at fixed rate. Finally, the financial cost of the public sector was 259.6 billion pesos, lower by 38.6 than budgeted, while the financial cost of the federal government was 184.8 billion pesos, lower by 11.5 than the program. Thank you for your attention.